Senate will come to order. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Thursday, February 17th. Barnard?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe? Cooper?
Here.
Dockstader?
Here.
Driscoll?
Here.
Emmerich? Esquibel? Geis?
Here.
Hastert?
Here.
Hicks?
Here.
Hines?
Here.
Jennings,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Landon,
here.
Martin,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Nutting,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Platern,
here.
President Anderson,
here.
Coe, Emmerich,
here.
Esquibel,
excuse.
29 present, 1 excused.
Prayer by Richard Brown.
Our inspirational thought this morning has to do with optimism. It is tempting to be negative in a time of change and uncertainty. It is in moments created by turmoil that opportunities for optimistic leadership become most apparent. In the midst of chaos, crisis, and ambiguity, leaders with the courage to see and guide others to envision a better future can transform paralyzing and negative mental and emotional climates, create belief and hope, and enable others to see and achieve success despite the current reality. Successful leaders have certain qualities and perspectives on life. They can see and behave beyond the current reality. They can make hard decisions with incomplete data, trusting their intuition. They integrate empathy and energy to align others to their pursuit. And perhaps most important, they view life's episodes with optimism and positivity. Our Father in heaven, we are grateful to be here today. With health and strength, and in the confines of this great edifice, our state capitol, as we view the anxiety and episodes that are going on throughout the world, we are so grateful for the peace that we enjoy, and pray for thy spirit to be with those who are suffering at this time because of the unrest throughout the world. Bless them. And we are thankful that we have been blessed with a great nation such as ours, with the freedoms that we enjoy. We pray that we will be able to preserve those freedoms and that we will be able to appreciate them and appreciate the work that this body is doing at this time. And we ask that thy spirit will be with them as they go through their day and take up the many issues at hand that they debate each day, that they will feel good about the decisions that they make, and that we as citizens of this great state will support their decisions and be appreciative of their efforts. We pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the pledge.
Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February the 16th, 2011 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Doctor for the day is Dr. Jerry Smith from Cheyenne. Our nurses for the day are Linda Clamp and Deb Lane. Those both are from Wyoming Medical Center, and thank you so much for being here today. On this day in Wyoming history, it said in 1906, a brakeman was blown from the top of a railroad car near Buford. Might have been the wind, I think. On this day in U.S. history, in 1897, the first state congress of the New York Parent Teachers Association was organized in New York, and one of the first major projects of the PTA worked on was the extension of kindergartens to the elementary school grades. Senator Case, do you have something for us this morning?
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have the privilege of the floor, please, sir?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a great privilege today to introduce to the Senate a soldier in the fight for epilepsy and epilepsy awareness. We have Joanna Hamilton, who is Miss Wyoming 2009. She has worked to promote disability awareness around the state. She's attended and speaking at more than 60 events between 2009 and 2010. She's a special education teacher and a mom of six boys. This is truly a heroine in the fight to bring awareness to people about disabilities. Joanna Hamilton.
Well, welcome to the Senate, and we do most appreciate the work that you're doing in the area of disabilities. Senator Esquivel. Go ahead.
Notifying the chair that I'm present. Thank you.
Senator Driscoll.
Yes, sir.
Were you standing to be recognized? Okay. All right. I think we're ready to go ahead and get started. Messages from the House.
February the 16th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 341, Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 106, School Finance Local Resources. Ayes 20, noes 35, excused 3. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. February the 16th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 342. Conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1, Mr. President. The Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a light committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 124. The House conferees are Representative Qualberg, Chairman, Representative Botten and McKim. February the 16th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 343. Conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1, Mr. President. The Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a light committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 128. The House conferees are Representative Peasley, Chairman, Representative Green, and Vranish. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 16th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 90, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye. Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, Nutting, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 16th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 208 in gross, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, Nutting, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 16th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 235, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, and Schiffer. No, Senator Nutting. Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 16th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 103, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senator Dockstader, Nutting, and Scott. No, Senator Martin and Schiffer. Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 16th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 252, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Martin, Nutting, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 16th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 36, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Martin, Nutting, and Schiffer. No, Senator Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Schiffer, did you have something for us?
Mr. President, House Bill 235, Natural Gas Vehicles, does have an appropriation, and I would ask that it be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, for their kind action.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. The request is that House Bill 235 be re-referred to Committee Number 2. Without objection, it so be ordered. Bill's on second reading. House Bill 5, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 5, University Revenue Bond Supplemental Coverage, sponsored by the Capital Financing Committee.
No amendments? Any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 5, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 13, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 13, Hathaway Success Curriculum 2, sponsored by the Education Committee.
There is an amendment, and I'd ask if that amendment be read in at this time. Second reading amendment number 1.
House Bill 13, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 2.
That is the, I believe, Schiffer amendment. I'd ask Senator Schiffer to address that, please. Go ahead, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 13. Mr. President, pursuant to our discussions yesterday, what this amendment does is goes in, and it really is down on, starting on lines 24, the department shall waive any requirement for success curriculum coursework if, upon receipt of written certification by the superintendent of a district, that any required coursework was not made available by that district to a student. Mr. President, what I'm addressing there is, if in the course of studies a student did not have the opportunity to take a course that's a required course, if that superintendent certifies that he never offered it to the student can use the procedure that's already in place to request a waiver. And that procedure is in place. I've walked through it a couple times with students. I know it works. Mr. President, what this does, it does a couple things. First of all, it has accountability in it for the superintendent. When he signs that waiver, he's saying, I never offered this child what we promised him. And I think that's a measure of accountability for superintendents. It also means that if a student did not have the opportunity to get the course, but they satisfied all the ACT, the grade point, all those things, then they can, if they can qualify for that waiver, they will get the scholarship, particularly at the higher level. Quite frankly, I think this is it's aimed, I'll make no bones about it, at the smaller schools, but obviously it applies to all schools, but it's the smaller schools with the restricted teaching staff that it's aimed at specifically, but it does apply to all schools. I think it's got accountability. I think it enables the students who really do try and get that the first or second level scholarship, and it opens the door for higher education. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Coe?
Well, Mr. President, I support the amendment. As we talk about school finance reform that we've been doing since 1997, to be exact, and if some might say Warshke case in 1980, but everything we talked about, particularly since 1997 with Campbell 1, has been about equal opportunity. And Hathaway Scholarship is, in fact, about equal opportunity. And if we do have these problems that exist out there with the small schools, we need to fix it. And I'll tell you what, I think we'll hear about it now, you know, with this amendment, if we do have these problems. And I think we're obligated, because of the significance of the Hathaway Scholarship Program, to fix it. So I urge that you adopt the amendment.
Thank you. Any other questions? Further discussion? Senator Von Platern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Standing on and against this amendment, this amendment actually says in the article, which we're talking about the whole success curriculum here, so anybody could write away, any superintendent, and there is importance put on that the superintendent's putting his name out there to say, we couldn't offer this for whatever reason. Please excuse the student from having to take this and be required for the success curriculum. But what it's doing is it opened up the whole success curriculum. It's not just picking on foreign language. Right now, there is a waiver provision, and this is from the Department of Ed. This is an email I sent out yesterday to try to answer some of these questions. Course waivers are generally granted only to those who have an extenuating circumstance that prevent a student from completing any part of the success curriculum. It exists. It exists. And why are we reiterating that fact when it's already there? If the school cannot provide it, you can write the letter from the superintendent or from the school. They don't actually specify superintendent, but the school. What we're doing is saying that anybody, it's a block grant. Remember this, block grant. So they can take their money and go in any direction they want. We have no control over that. So if they think something else is more important, and they don't go out of their way to find a foreign language, to find a calculus teacher, find an Algebra 2 teacher, they can easily write this letter, sign it, and that money is still there. They didn't lose any financial. There's no financial loss to this district. And they don't have to provide it, and that student and that school is doing a less rigorous course and still qualifying versus your school, who is putting out the money for those teachers. We found out we're missing 250 teachers in that block grant, statewide. Well, where's that money? We don't know. But the fact is, you can make it 251 teachers and take that amount of money and put it somewhere else in your school. I stand against this amendment. As I said earlier, it already exists. And as far as foreign language, they allow for things like Rosetta Stone, as long as you write it in your program, in your curriculum plan. The WEN videos, there's another university that I don't even want to mention on this floor because they happen to be quite a rivalry for our team, but they also provide an online and is accepted by the Department of Ed in Wyoming. So, against this amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for this amendment. Folks, what you have is you have a limited number of teachers in some of these small schools. A lot of them have multiple endorsements. And if you lose a teacher with a multiple endorsement, they're not like going out to the teacher pool out there as far as people you can hire and picking somebody up that may have two or three endorsements to teach different classes. And so I don't believe that we need to hold a student responsible, you know, for the status of our job market as far as teachers. Because sometimes a course may not be offered just because you don't have that teacher with this multiple endorsement characteristic. And so to say to that student that this waiver isn't available, frankly, is unconscionable.
Other discussion or questions? Senator Hicks, and then we'll go to Senator Rothfuss. Go ahead, Senator Hicks.
Just on and for the amendment, and I think to answer the question from my good colleague from Campbell County is he's absolutely right. You can probably do this now under policy. This would put it in statutes. Policies are much easier to change than statutes. Policy could change tomorrow. This basically would just codify it and say this is what the intent of the legislature is.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm a co-sponsor on this amendment, on and for the amendment. I certainly am sensitive to what my colleague from Campbell County is saying, though, and perhaps it would be good if the sponsors talked a little bit afterwards about a third reading amendment to make sure that we're looking specifically to concepts that we're dealing with in the expansion of the Hathaway Success Curriculum, which I think was the intent. We don't want to be waiving mathematics, for example. That's certainly not the intent of it. So, Mr. President, I think that maybe we can give some thought to my colleague from Campbell County's concerns, but this is certainly moving towards what we want to do to make sure that everybody is taking part in and participating in the Success Curriculum to the greatest extent possible within their district.
Other comments? Senator Driscoll.
Chairman, thank you. Rise in support of it. I'd really like to thank the sponsors. This goes a long ways towards making the small schools feel like they have a fair chance at the top end of the scholarships. So thank you very much.
Other comments or discussion before? Senator Schiffer, would you like, okay. The amendment that we have before us is second reading amendment number one to House Bill 13. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Is there any other discussion? Senator Cove.
Hey, Mr. President, thank you. Yesterday we had some questions raised about career tech, and there's a handout on your desk for the benefit, I think, of the senator from Albany County that lists all the different career tech courses, and I'm just amazed by them. You know, as I go through the list, agricultural, business, manufacturing, and science, family and consumer science, health science technologies, business courses, marketing courses, technology education. So I draw your attention to this handout.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, are these what we call rigorous?
Other comments in regard to House Bill 13? Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to commend the committee for working hard to finally bring this together, to make this scholarship more inclusive for more students across the state of Wyoming. I urge your favorable support.
House Bill 13. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 28, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 28, Child Protection, Shelter Care, Initial Hearings, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee.
There are no amendments. Is there any discussion on House Bill 28? Seeing none, House Bill 28 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 37, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 37, State Archive Storage Study, sponsored by the Travel Committee.
No amendments. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. House Bill 37, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 63, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 63, Subdivision Water Study, sponsored by Representative Madden.
No amendments? Any discussion? Seeing none. House Bill 63, having been read two separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 69, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 69, Prescription for Marijuana Invalid, sponsored by Representative Buchanan.
There are no amendments. Any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 69, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 74, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 74, Validity of Marriage, sponsored by Representative Peterson.
There are some amendments that I'd ask the reading clerk to read in the First Amendment at this time.
House Bill 74, second reading, amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page Senator, 1, line 6.
Senator Case, would you like to move and speak to the amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 74. Mr. President, this amendment is brought forward in the hopes that we can warn folks that might be inadvertently caught up in our laws when they enter into the state of Wyoming. This is really addressing folks that may not be aware of our new proposed law and the consequences of it. And this would perhaps satisfy a obligation that we would have to inform them. So the gist of the amendment, Mr. President, is it's an appropriation for $200,000 to the Wyoming Department of Transportation to establish signs along all the major entrances to Wyoming and the airports. And the signs would inform our visitors to Wyoming that, warning, your marriage or civil union may be void or voidable in Wyoming. Proceed with extreme caution. And I feel that we probably have a bit of a moral obligation to do that, Mr. President, you know, so that people would not come into Wyoming believing that a solemnized civil union or marriage that they have obtained legally in another jurisdiction and brought forward to Wyoming would somehow concur any benefit whatsoever as they proceed to view the great grandeur and beauty of this wonderful state.
Is there any other discussion in regard to this amendment? Question being called, this amendment does contain an appropriation, and I would... there is appropriated $200,000. We have to go to a roll call. So I would ask that the roll be called.
Barnard.
No.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
No.
Dockstader.
No.
Driscoll.
No.
Emmerich. Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
No.
Hines.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Landon.
No.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Nutting.
No.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Ross.
No.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
No.
Von Flatern. President Anderson.
No.
Closing vote. Martin, aye to no.
Burns,
aye to no. Rothfuss, aye to no. Closing. Case, aye to no. Esquivel, aye to no. Hastert, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 noes.
By your vote, second reading amendment number 1 to Senate or House Bill 74 has failed. There is a second reading amendment. I'd ask the reading clerk to read that in at this time.
House Bill 74, second reading amendment number 2 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 1.
That is the Meyer Amendment. Senator Meyer, would you like to move and speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate file or to House Bill 74 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Let me kind of explain the reason for the amendment here. We looked at the language in Section 22-101, and these are for marriages contracted in Wyoming are void without any decree or divorce. Well, when we look at the Romanette 4 and 5, these are marriages which cannot be contracted for in the first place in Wyoming, so there's no need to void something that can't exist. So we thought that the language was a little bit circular from that point, and there was really no need for the language on page 2, lines 13 through 23. And turning over to page 3, subsection H, you can maybe derive an intent from the title of what the House was trying to do here, but again, they kind of had a circular argument going on as far as marriages contracted in Wyoming that can't exist shall not be entitled to the legal obligations and responsibilities. So again, I thought that there was a circular argument there as to, it's, at best, the language was ambiguous, and there was no clear intent, and I think that if anything in this manner, you need to have an unambiguous, clear intent. Also, there were some areas there as far as any common law or any source other than civil or criminal. You may even infer some of the contracts that people are going through now to determine their living status and life status in Wyoming that were not civil unions could maybe even have some chance of being not enforceable. So there was quite a few things in that law in that section, Mr. President, that just didn't track, were ambiguous, weren't clear, and frankly, some of them probably wouldn't stand a consideration of the Senate by themselves. So what I've done, Mr. President, is to draw, I guess, the body's attention to the deficiencies in the work of the House and ask for you to vote aye on this amendment.
Other discussion? Seeing none, the question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 2, House Bill 74. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Any other discussion in regard to the bill? Seeing none. House Bill 74. Having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 110, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 110, Successor Corporation Asbestos-Related Liability Act 2, sponsored by the Minerals Committee.
There are no amendments. Is there any discussion in regard to House Bill 110? Seeing none, House Bill 110, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 111, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 111, Public Works and Contracts 2, sponsored by the Minerals Committee.
There are no amendments. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 111, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 143, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 143, Manufacturing Tax Exemption, sponsored by Representative Miller.
There are no amendments. Any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 143, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 153, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 153, Agricultural Tax Refund Program, sponsored by Representative Semlich.
There are no amendments. Any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 153, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 157, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 157, Abolition of Worthier Title Doctrine, sponsored by Representative Brown.
There are no amendments. Any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 157, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 158, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 158, Rule Against Perpetuities, sponsored by Representative Brown.
There is an amendment, and I'd ask the reading clerk to read that amendment in at this time.
House Bill 158, second reading amendment number 1, Page 1, line 4.
Senator Scott, would you like to move and speak to the amendment, please?
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, recall the discussion that we had yesterday in Committee of the Whole on this bill, that a good part of the origin for the rule against perpetuities was that you could get properties just locked up where the grantor of a trust way back when put conditions on that essentially meant that the land couldn't be managed and just got locked up permanently. Circumstances change over time, and you can eventually get yourself as a society in real trouble with these blocks of land that cannot be managed and used sensibly given the conditions of the day, because somebody 100 years earlier or more had put some restrictions on. And we've gone with this bill and with the enactments previously to allowing trusts that last up to 1,000 years. So this is a real risk. What this does is it says that no trust going to contain restrictions on the sale or specific management of the real property. So you can't put a restriction in your trust on what can be done with that land or other real property, including mineral interests, that lasts more than 21 years after the life of the youngest trust beneficiary, which is basically what the rule against perpetuity has been. And then it says, and that's important given this bill, this prohibition applies whether real property is owned directly or through another entity. Because with this bill, there's a clear way to dodge around and create a corporation or some LLC, something like that, to own the real property and then put the restrictions on that way. So we aren't going to allow that. And then the last sentence says that the trust may contain general durable restrictions or guidelines on how you manage it, the degree of risk. That's so you can have in the trust the prudent man rule or some derivative of that that provides some guidance and some basis for dealing with a trustee who basically abuses the trust. And that's important. Mr. President, I think it's important we do this on second reading. I think the principles in this amendment are very important and ones we ought to enact. I do suspect that perhaps some of the attorneys in the body could, on third reading, refine and improve the language a little, but I'll represent to you this language achieves what we need to have achieved and prevents us from falling into a trap, Mr. President, that I think we're in the process of falling into as we forget why the rule against perpetuities came into being in the first place.
Discussion, Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. And not rising for or against it, really. But I'd also like to sponsor, isn't this kind of a major policy shift that we're doing in the amendment? And has the sponsor thought about, should we be doing that now on a bill that came through, or should we be doing this in the interim to where we can have public comment and have the opinions of our constituents added to this or deleted from it?
Is there any other discussion or questions for the sponsor before we move on? Senator Perkins, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. With this bill, I mean, ultimately, let's go back and just be clear what the existing law is and what the bill and the effect that this amendment has. Right now, you cannot have real estate in a trust that lasts longer than the rule of perpetuities applies. Neither the bill doesn't change that. This amendment makes a minor change to that. The only change that this amendment does is that it now restricts it. Before, it was a life in being. And believe it or not, in trust work, sometimes you go out and it just has to be a life in being, someone who's alive at the time the trust was created. It's not necessarily a beneficiary. It can be You may find that the youngest descendant of Thomas Jefferson could be a life and being at the time the trust is created. The only thing this really does is restrict that now to where it's a life benefit. That life and being is usually designated in the trust. But this now changes that to where it's now the youngest trust beneficiary, and that's a completely different and much more restrictive than even what's in the law now. So that's what this amendment really does. Other than that, you can't have real property in a trust for longer than the rule of perpetuities allows. So this even shortens it up a little bit shorter and makes a unique version to the rule against perpetuities. The other thing it does do is that on the restrictions for the sale and management of the real property, you can have in these trusts that go much longer than rural perpetuities would allow, corporations, limited liability companies, things like that. That's principal because that's personal property. It's not real property. So that can go for a long period of time. And so when you look at this, I'm not really sure how this would really work, how that would be enforceable, who would enforce it. Those are all particular issues that might come up. And the particular question I would have for the sponsor of the amendment is, what effect does this have on the significant number of conservation easements, which are interest in real property? What effect might this have on conservation easements and other things like that that are held in various land trusts around the state that hold and these conservation easements and these other things? There could be. And I don't know the answer to that question. That's a genuine question, Mr. President. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there other questions or discussion before the sponsor? Senator Scott, would you like to respond to that? I don't see any other requests. Go ahead, Senator Scott. Oh, Senator Hines, did you have something before Senator Scott? Go ahead, Senator Hines, before Senator Scott rises.
Chairman, what comes to my mind when we're speaking of the youngest trust, the life of the youngest trust beneficiary. Sometimes trusts are set up, the way I understand them, to a person or their living heirs. Now, are we referring to the person that named or the living heirs in that trust?
Other questions before the sponsor stands? Seeing none, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, first, with regard to the life and being concept, Mr. President, that's why I want to do this on second reading, because I thought the attorneys might well be able to refine the language a little. Second, the response to the question of should we do it as an interim bill, I don't think it's that major a shift in policy. But this bill is producing, it looks to me, like some loopholes where you can get around the thing, the rule against perpetuities. And I think this amendment is needed to put a stop to those. And my judgment is if we think that this is something that ought to be reviewed in the interim, the way to do that is to defeat the bill on third reading. And then we'll have a discussion of it in the interim, and hopefully they'll include some kind of language like this. But I think we're running some real risks here. So I think the best thing to do, Mr. President, is to adopt the amendment, let the attorneys, if they want to say life and being as opposed to the way it's worded here, that's a simple third reading amendment.
Senator Esquivel, well, sponsor has taken his last time. The amendment before us is second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 158. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
This amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill, Senate File 158. Senator Nicholas?
I supported that amendment, but I would like to move the hold the bill back for second reading tomorrow. I think this language is important enough that we ought to try to get it straightened out in second reading.
The request is that Senate file or House Bill 158 be laid back until second reading tomorrow. Senator Cole, before I rule on that, go ahead. Okay. That was a motion, so all those in favor of House Bill 158 being laid back until second reading, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried, and so House Bill 158 is laid back until second reading tomorrow. House Bill 159, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 159, Uniform Trust Code Amendment, sponsored by Representative Brown.
There are no amendments. House Bill 159 having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 160, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 160, Management Audit Committee Subpoena Powers, sponsored by the Management Audit Committee.
There are no amendments. Any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 160 having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? It is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage.
Mr. President.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, before we go to third reading, may I have privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
Mr. President and members of the body, it's not often that you get students, especially elementary students, coming all the way down 325 miles from Bighorn, Wyoming. Up in the West Gallery here, we have half of the third grade class, and I'd like to mention the teachers that came down with them. Nan Wallach, Melanie Meineke, Andrea Gunkel, and various parents and so forth, and the 2011 Wyoming student teacher of the year, Lori Graves. Please make them welcome to the Senate.
You are indeed welcome, and we hope that you enjoy your day with us. Senate File 1, third reading of the bill.
Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations, an act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of state government, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
This is Senate File 1, the budget bill. We're about to start the process of dealing with those third reading amendments. The first amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 19 to the budget bill, and I'd ask that the reading clerk read that in at this time.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 19, budget affected, section 30, state auditor. Section.
I believe that's the Nicholas Meyer amendment. Senator Nicholas, would you like to speak to that, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 19 to Senate File 1. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that haven't watched this, it's tough sometimes to be an attorney on the Appropriations Committee. We conducted a hay study on behalf of the state to determine what the market salaries were for a variety of employees around the state, and the $7.7 million in the budget is designed to drive people, employees, to the market that we determined would exist. The judiciary refused to participate in the hay study, and so we didn't put any funds in for their salary increases. They came a few days later or ago and said, well, what about our salary increases? And they said, well, look, what are your market pays? We don't know what your market pays are. You haven't participated in it. And the dilemma is always, well, we don't think that we have to participate with the executive branch. We determine salaries ourselves. And my problem is that people that determine the salaries themselves don't have a check and balance. And I struggled with it. I do think that we do need to attend to the judiciary's request, but what we've done here as a a different fix. As we said, we'll appropriate $600,000 for your salary increases. But in order to get those, you have to go, we're going to assign to the Division of A&I, to their folks, the responsibility to create, put all of the judicial salaries into our salary studies. They will certify to the governor that they've done that and what the amount is necessary to bring the, those employees up to the salary bands that we've determined are appropriate for those market levels. And only that amount of money will be transferred, and the governor won't transfer the money out of the account until this happen, or until the certification has taken place. The judiciary will not like it because they'll continue to insist that they shouldn't have to respond to the executive branch, that the executive branch should not be looking at their salaries. Our position is the executive branch of the A&I pays their heat bills, they pay their, they take care of the buildings, and there are many instances where we have to mix these relationships. The $600,000 comes out of the $7 million that we've already appropriated, so that there won't be additional funds. It will reduce everybody's, instead of getting to 91%, it might get to everybody to 90.5%. I'd urge your support of the amendment.
Further discussion of this amendment? Question being called, although this is just a transfer of funds, I am going to ask for a roll call, yeas and nays on this in regard to the action being taken. Ask the Chief Clerk to call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross? Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 22, Senate file 1 has passed the Senate. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 22. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 22, budget section 20, Department of Environmental Quality.
Senator Rossus, would you like to move and speak to the amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would. I move Senate file number 1, third reading amendment number 22. This is a bit of a policy decision on our approach to the increase in the budget that we're looking at, Mr. President, for the Department of the Environmental Quality. DEQ came back when they had concerns regarding their land quality division, and you can see in the budget on page 18, lines 7 and 8, that there was an additional $1.5 million appropriated to land quality division to help to improve the performance of that division by decreasing the backlog that's been building up over the years. In addition to that request, DEQ also requested 4 additional full-time employees to help diminish that backlog. The Joint Appropriations decided that instead of having the additional 4 employees, the 4 FTEs, that they would just work through contractors. But what DEQ has indicated and what others have indicated is that adding additional FTEs is an essential part of clearing that backlog. So this particular amendment, Mr. President, cuts the difference in half, basically. It increases the FTEs by 2 to try and make sure that the Land Quality Division has the people on the ground, the independence that they need to work the permitting applications and other applications that are going through DEQ, and to make sure that we can get through this backlog in an expeditious fashion. What we need to take into consideration, I think, with DEQ and with this Land Quality Division is that those delays in the permitting applications for good permits are delays in income for the state of Wyoming. As I see it, this is not necessarily an expense to the state of Wyoming, but an investment to the state of Wyoming, and I would urge your support for the amendment. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. President.
Discussion? We'll go with Senator Jennings first, then Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I remember about my first or second year, I got up and I asked you guys to put more people into DEQ for some kind of a permitting thing or because the coal bed was getting ready to boom. Or I can't remember what it was. But I thought I really had a really good argument that year about giving more people to them. And, you know, members of the 61st, every year we come back and DEQ wants some more here and wants some more here and one here. And we just keep growing that section and growing that section. And they never seem to be able to have enough people. I think with the contractors and the money that we gave them, they can catch up with the backlog and just do what they have without these extras. I'd ask you to vote no on this.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, to refresh the body's memory, that was for coal bed methane. And then if you remember, coal bed methane kind of fell off a cliff there for a while. And you went from dozens of rigs up in the Powder River Basin to maybe one or two operating. And DEQ came to us and said, well, actually, we went to DEQ and says, you justify why you need these extra positions. And so they switched them into other areas. And they said that they didn't have the backlog up there, but they're going to go to another area and work different areas. And now they've got a backlog. Those people are there. They're moving around in the areas where they need to have them. And this is really employee growth, like you can't believe. That's why JAC said, okay, we know there's a problem. Let's hire the contractors to go out there and fix the problem, get rid of the backlog, because that's what you said you want to spend the money for. Now, folks, if you add these other positions in there, they'll come back to JAC next year and they say, well, we fixed this problem over here, but we actually really had a higher priority over here, and those positions won't go exactly where they said they were going to take that. And so you're running around the garden path and down the rabbit trail year after year after year. And we finally said, okay, enough is enough. You expressed to us what the problem was. You identified what the problem is. Here's the money to fix the problem. Go out into the private sector and contract for it. When the problem's done, if you got another problem, you identify that problem. You go ahead and ask us for the budget for it, and we'll consider it at that time. And that's how the process needs to start working with this agency. Otherwise, it's going to be as big as the health department.
Other commentary? Questions? Senator Bebout, go ahead.
Thank you. I, too, would ask that you defeat this amendment. And we had opportunities during the interim with the Minerals Committee to spend a lot of time with the department talking about various issues and things that they were looking at. And one of the big ones was permitting and having not being able to get permits done in a timely manner. And what they did is they in fact, went out and are in the process, and it should be completed. We should have some results about an internal look at the way they do it and how they allocate their resources. And I think until we see that, until we have some more discussion, to add two positions is premature, and I would ask that you defeat this.
Other? Senator Rothfuss, I don't see any others. Would you like to respond your final time?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would. We can certainly do a lot of these things through the private sector. There's no question about it. We can get contractors to do a lot of this work. The reality, though, is that just assuming that we can ship people around within DEQ, that one day they need to be in air quality, the next day they need to be in land quality, I think oversimplifies the roles that they play. If you've got a hydrogeologist, you can't just send them over to the air quality division and have them do the job and then bring them back a little bit later. So a lot of the concerns that DEQ has expressed with regard to their expertise in place and the number of people they have are in specialty areas. And it's true, again, that we can hire specialists out in the private sector to do those jobs. And, in fact, I do some of my own business in that world of being one of those specialists. And to be perfectly honest, those specialists charge a lot more than what we would be paying the full-time equivalents when we know we need those specialists. That's just the practical reality. So if we want to be billed at a much, 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 much higher rate for our hydrogeologists or our specialists that we know we're going to need to address these problems, we can certainly do that. That is a policy decision that's up to this body. But with the backlog that we're seeing right now, And knowing anecdotally, and I think everyone on the Minerals Committee has heard this, it takes at least a year to really get one of these individuals up to speed before they really are effective. So we're always going to be at least a year behind to get these full-time equivalents operating at the level that they need to be operating at. So it may be true we could try and ask them to shuffle it around and lose some expertise and try and take it to the private sector and pay a little bit of extra. But the reality is that we are experiencing a backlog. We can make blame, we can do what we want to try and address that consideration, but there has been a backlog that has been costing us money, and I don't think anyone here could deny that adding two more positions to Land Quality Division is going to help that backlog. So again, it's a policy decision, but I think it's one that we should make to try and decrease this backlog, and if we want to come back later and take a hard look, maybe through a management audit or something along those lines of how the resources are being used, I would certainly support that, Mr. President. But right now, we know there's a backlog, and we know if we add some additional people, we can be addressing that backlog more effectively. Thank you, Mr. President. Again, I'd urge support for this amendment.
Thank you, Senator Rothfuss. No budget effect here, but given the fact that this is a policy in regard to two full-time equivalents, I would ask that this reading or the chief clerk call the roll. Third reading amendment number 22.
Barnard.
No.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
No.
Dockstader. Driscoll, Emmerich, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Martin, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Platern. President Anderson.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 5 ayes, 25 noes.
By your vote, second reading amendment number 22 has failed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number two. I'd ask the reading clerk to read that in at this time.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 2, budget. 39, Wildlife Natural Resource Trust.
Senator Driscoll, would you like to move and speak to that amendment at this time?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to move for adoption of amendment number 2 to Senate File 1, third reading amendment. This amendment is for a direct appropriation of $5 million for the Wildlife Trust Fund in specific response to sage-grouse habitat. The federal government, through the FRPP, Farmland Ranch Protection Program, has allocated $17 million specifically to the state of Wyoming. This money all requires cash match from various entities in order for it to be enabled. Through the past years, FRPP, one of the major factors of being able to use these monies in core sage-grouse areas has been the Wildlife Trust Fund. Their balance of spending at this point in time and the balance that they allow in the easements will not allow them to match to the full extent of this $17 million. I represent to you this is a key piece of legislature, of amendment for Wyoming, in the fact that sage-grouse are still on the verge of being listed in the state of Wyoming, and this affects our oil and gas production through huge parts of the state. This money, as there's a handout that came around, this money will be leveraged at a 4 or 5 to 1 level. The $17 million will be matched as it is run out by $8.5 million of landowner investment, $5 million from the Wildlife Trust Fund, $3.5 million in funds that are raised privately. This amount of money, this $5 million, will leverage upwards of $29 million in the state of Wyoming. Goes strictly towards protection of sage-grouse habitat in core areas, which does keep the listing beat back for the state. It addresses the highest concern at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in the state of Wyoming, which is sage-grouse habitat and fragmentation of it. I would point out that this in no way impacts mineral development or in any way stops it. In fact, the opposite may be true. It may keep large areas open that are available to it, plus keep them from designating areas away. I urge your support of this amendment, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Comments, questions? Senator Nicholas, go ahead.
Mr. President, it sounds like a good idea, and we've already appropriated significant monies to the Wildlife Trust Fund. We're appropriating to the trust fund the equivalent of the earnings that they would earn on a $200 million corpus. So we give them a lot of funding, and, if a member brings a great idea, you hate to rain on their parade every time, but, I guess my answer is I'd urge you to vote against the bill. Let's bring it back during the interim and look at it and take a look at what the Wildlife Trust Fund is doing to make sure that they're paying attention to these dollars and marshaling their dollars. But, if you want to appropriate state monies for every time the federal government comes up with a great idea to encourage you to do it, it gets pretty expensive. And my assumption is that if this is that good of a deal, that there are private industry folks, there are private donors that can take advantage of it. Let's keep this agency within its budget. Thank you.
Senator Hicks?
Yeah. Mr. President, I think we need an adequate description of how the process works so you understand the real threat and also the real opportunity here. Sage grouse have been listed as a candidate species, and under the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service guidelines, they go through an annual review to determine whether they're warranted for listing or they stay as a candidate species. We're currently going through the first annual review for these species. And what that basically does is they come out there and they say, what's the status of the species and what other protection measurements are being placed out there? And they will make a determination at that point in time. So every year, we're under the potential threat of another endangered species that has a lot more ramifications than wolves do, because these inhabit a lot broader terrain, and they have direct implications on both our minerals and our livestock industry. These monies just became available 2 weeks ago. And the way the Farm Bill program works is if you don't use these monies within a short period of time, usually with these is about 18 months, than any other state surrounding around you that can tap into those funds. There was $40 million allocated through the USDA, through the Farm Bill programs, eligible for sage-grouse in the western United States. Because Wyoming has the largest population of sage-grouse, we got the bulk of that funding allocated to the state of Wyoming. So we have two potential things in here. You either use it or you lose it. And we have to continue to demonstrate progress to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that we are doing everything within our power to preclude listing onto the endangered species. And when they go through that evaluation, they say, what's changed? And if the birds are still static, but we're not increasing adequate protection that they feel are going to continue to increase or maintain those populations, they can reverse that decision. And I can tell you that the dire economic consequences by putting these birds on the endangered species will cripple this state. I would urge you to adopt this amendment. It does deserve immediate consideration. These funds will go away if we don't find the ability to find the matching funds for them. And this is one of the criteria that we're going to be evaluated in the state of Wyoming. Thank you, Mr.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I apologize if I missed this from our Chairman of Appropriations. I guess we talked a great deal about this issue over the last couple of years, and again at the Western States gathering that some of us were able to attend in the state to the west of us, and even heard from our Wyoming representatives there, and I just was not aware of this matching capability or this need for the $5 million. That's a very sizable amount of money, and I would be interested in how that was represented to the Appropriations Committee. Was this requested and it was then denied, and so now we're coming in at this point. So maybe a little more on that. Thank you.
I'm going to go to Senator Bebout, and then I'll go to Senator Perkins. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a couple of quick questions, and the idea sounds like an intriguing idea, and certainly something we ought to consider. Why wouldn't we not be able to do it anyway if you wanted to do it in the trust fund? That would be my first question, because I know there's considerable funding available, and certainly that's something that the board could discuss, I would think, possibly. And the other thing is, maybe there's another avenue through the governor and some of the flex that he has, if he recognizes this, that he might be able to pursue it and do it. And of course, we will be back here for the budget session, but maybe there's some avenues there that would be available for us to look at this.
Other, go ahead, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, and just to follow on, my thoughts are long, right along the good senator from Fremont County. My understanding is that the Wildlife Trust Fund and the sage-grouse management is under the same management. And we've in this session approved a significant amount of money for expenditures of conservation easements and other things. And I'm just wondering, under that, is there a way to shift funding? Is there a way to change the priorities within the trust fund? And if there is some other B11 or other types of ways for the executive branch to deal with this issue.
Okay. Are there any other questions here before I go to the – I'm going to go to the chairman of appropriations, and then I'm going to go to the sponsor. And so I want to have all that taken care of before we cap this conversation. Senator Case, did you have something before we go to the chair of appropriations and the sponsor? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. I became aware of this matching opportunity when a press release came about on the 4th of February. And I have the press release right here. It's from that large federal agency. Today announced the availability of $17 million in additional funding through the Farm and Ranch Lands Protection Program to conserve critical sage-grouse habitat in Wyoming. So it's very recent, relatively. It's a large amount of money. It's a tremendous opportunity, and one that's pretty much irreplaceable. And it probably has a lot of significance with respect to not just some of the industries that you're thinking about, but also oil and gas, mining, wind development. The thing with my county is we are like the front end of the core area, and that makes us, in essence, all the core area established in our county makes it potentially possible to do more elsewhere in Wyoming, but really puts a limitation on what we can do. We think that there are, you know, definitely advantages to having these matching opportunities. And it fits, Mr. President, perfectly with the fact that for the first time in our history, we have a well-established vehicle in the Wildlife Trust Fund and its efficient and competent administration to, you know, and its proven track record to bring this forward. So all the factors are there. It's a unique opportunity to access major matching funding that just recently become available.
Are there any other questions before I go to Chairman of Appropriations, then we'll finish with the sponsor? Seeing none, go ahead, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. A couple things. One is that in the budget for the Wildlife Trust Fund projects, we appropriated $11.7 million for the biennium. That means there's $5.8 million left in the fund for matching. And there is $5 million to access those if this is their priority. If it came 2 weeks ago, here's the process. You run it down to the governor's office. You get their people on it. You evaluate it. They read the bill. They determine what the options are, whether it's something we really want to do, what the conditions are, what the attachments are, what it can be spent on. The governor makes a recommendation to bring it up to JAC. We conduct a hearing, and we find out, and you don't do it on third reading. And there's a process. But I'd also tell you that, like I say, there's $5.8 million in this budget, in this line item, and there's a huge amount of dollars outside. So if the money, for example, is simply for conservation easements, that's one thing. If it's for projects, we have a variety of funding out in the university and DEQ for projects that are related to this. We have a bunch of money in there for sagebrush, or not sagebrush, we do have for sagebrush too, but for sage chickens. And so there's a process to be followed, and if somebody, what I'm telling you, if you read something while we're working down here, go through the process and get the people that we have experts out there that can quickly identify these things and look and see exactly what it is and what the conditions are and whether our current resources are sufficient or insufficient to take advantage of it. But this is right now, I can tell you, there's $5.8 million left in the Wildlife Trust Fund, and if this is that great of a deal, we'll just use that money.
Go ahead, Senator Driscoll. Would you like to conclude this debate?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to answer a little bit. My apologies for not following protocol. I'm a freshman, and I didn't know it. Did not realize the opportunity until the last minute on it. Realized that there was not a chance that we were going to match it. I have a question back that I'll leave at the end for appropriate. I believe that $5.8 million goes into the corpus of the fund, and it's only able to be used for the interest off of it, which is what they use now. As far as using what they have, their funding is set up where they will spend no more than 40% of their money on conservation easements. You see the big projects here, and it looks like that's all their projects. It is not. It is a very small portion of the projects, just happens to be the big ones. As far as going to the interim, there's not time. This money will go away in 12 to 18 months. It will be gone if we don't appropriate it this session. It will go away. It's a little like the old Fram oil filter deal. You can pay me now or pay me later. Should we wander into the ground that sage grouse become endangered species, we might not be talking about $5 million. We may be talking about $30, $40, $50 million that we don't have in funding or that we can't develop, because once you're listed, you're done. We're stopped on a lot of areas, and this is trade-off. So I really, really encourage you, regardless of what some freshman did to you as far as protocol, didn't know to run to the governor's office. But I can tell you we need the $5 million, and we need it today. Should we not get it? I hate to come back and say I told you so.
Senator Nicholas, I'm going to allow some latitude here in regard to this question about the 5.8 and what happens to that.
Thank you. If you turn to your cheat sheet at page 2 and you look at the Wildlife Trust funding, you'll see that this is about two-thirds down the page. You'll see that we're appropriating $5 million in total that's added to the corpus of the Wildlife Trust Fund. We have appropriated $11.782513 million to projects. Now, when you appropriate that, it's a biennial request, and the agencies are required to expend it at a pro rata pace. So right now you would expect two-thirds of that money has not been committed because we're only 6 months into the biennium. Now, I just divide it in half so that in July 1, there will be $5.8 million left, but it actually should be closer to $7 million because we've only done the first round of hearings. So it should be about $7 million that has not been utilized or committed about this point. Come July 1, there will be $5.8 million left in, according to that budget appropriation. So the $5 million is for the corpus. So there was a total of $16 million made available, and there should be $6 to $7 million left in the operating for projects.
Thank you. Since I have allowed latitude, I'll go ahead here, and then we'll try to get this debate. Go ahead, Senator Schiffer.
Chairman, point of order. It is not required under any circumstances that a legislator that wants to amend the budget on first, second, or third reading, go down to the governor's office and ask for a letter or a seal of approval or a tattoo or anything else. It's our budget. And the way the rules are set up, we are forbidden, more or less, from bringing in committee of the whole amendments as a courtesy to the Appropriations Committee, which means second and third reading are wide open. And they're wide open for any member of this legislature, with or without, but whether they want to visit downstairs, that has nothing to do with it. It's our budget. And to say there's a requirement that they go get a letter from the governor is absolutely wrong. It's not in our rules. It's not in our procedure. And it has never, and I hope it never is, a requirement when we start working the budget. That isn't right, nor is that the way it should be. It's our budget.
Chief Clerk will call a roll. This debate, I think, has got plenty of information. You can make an informed vote. Please call a roll in regard to third reading amendment number 2, Senate File 1.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
No.
Dockstader.
No.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
No.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
No.
Jennings. Johnson,
no.
Landon,
no.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Bonflatern,
no.
President Anderson,
no.
Closing vote, closing vote closed. 13 ayes, 17 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 2, Senate File 1 has failed. Next amendment for consideration is amendment number 3. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 3, Budget 39, Wildlife Natural Resource Trust.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to withdraw this amendment.
Third reading amendment number 3 has been withdrawn by the request of the sponsor. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 4. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 4, Budget 45, Department of Transportation.
Senator Perkins, would you like to speak to your amendment, please?
Sure. Thank you. Mr. President, I'd move third reading amendment number 4 to Senate File number 1 and ask for favorable consideration. This has, it looks like deja vu all over again. It is, although this is exactly the one that was approved the other day. What this does is simply goes in. There's some footnote language that staff caught that we need to clean up. And so this goes back and cleans up some footnote language that needs to be done in order for the amendment to be clear. Other than that, it's not any additional money either up or down. It's just a technical approval, a technical adjustment to the footnote.
Questions? Technical adjustment. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has passed. Next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 5. I ask that be read in this time.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 5, Budget Section 48, Department of Health.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, what this amendment does is it goes into the session laws from last time, and which are reproduced here, and gets rid of the footnote that keeps the nursing homes from going through their normal rebasing. And my information is that will occur, if this amendment passes, that will occur during the next year. Mr. President, for your information, this is likely to cost us some money in the Medicaid program, so it does have monetary implications. The amount is, you don't know that until you actually do the rebasing. It's possible the effect will be put off a little bit depending on how things, the timing on things. But, Mr. President, we've got troubles in our nursing homes. They are two-thirds roughly dependent on the Medicaid program for their income. We have held them constant. The Department of Health did in the 10% cuts exempt the nursing homes because they knew there were trouble there, so they didn't get hit with that. But they haven't been able to do the normal rebasing, and they haven't been getting the kind of increases keeping up with inflation. And we've got a number of them in one degree or another of financial trouble because we are paying significantly less than it costs to provide the services. I've seen the listing. It ranges, what we're paying as a percentage of cost, ranges as low as 80%. There's an outlier or two where it goes very low, and those are basically hospital rehab facilities that are licensed as nursing homes. And that's really a different set of issues. But with the traditional nursing homes, we're getting them in financial trouble because we have been demanding that they provide services for us at less than it costs, and that we've done that generally in Medicaid, Mr. President. But for the providers that are heavily dependent on Medicaid, that don't have the ability to cost shift and put a hidden tax on everybody else, they're dependent on us, and we need to do something about it now, Mr. President, or we're going to have a good deal more trouble in the future. The quality of the care in the nursing home is going to go down. Your senior citizens are going to suffer because there aren't enough people to take care of them. And I think we're running a significant risk. We're going to get another nursing home in big financial trouble. So for all those reasons, Mr. President, I urge adoption of this amendment.
Comments? Questions? Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. The budget amendment was placed on for a specific purpose, and the fact that we're going through a flatline budget. We had reduced budgets by 10% throughout government, and we put a provision in to stop these automatic cost of living increases that were occurring to these outside entities that rely heavily on our budget. So we said during this two-year period, while we're sorting out our finances, everything shut down so we wouldn't have automatic increases in our Medicaid budget. Sponsors act, I would expect, and I think he's probably correct, these firms that go out and do the rate rebasing are firms that have never in my history ever come out with less money, and you don't know what they're going to rebase at, and we've got a budget right now that we believe is very tight, that the Department of Health would like more money right now with the current budget. I'd urge that you defeat the amendment.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, a question for the sponsor of the amendment. If indeed we remove the footnote and so the cost of living increase goes in, does the sponsor know how much money we're talking about here? Because this is actually an additional appropriation of, at this point, we don't know how much.
Is there any other questions or comments before the sponsor takes his last opportunity? Seeing none, Senator Scott, would you like to speak to those?
Mr. President, in answer to that last question, no, and nobody knows. You don't know until you do the rebates. How much inflation has there been? What's the timing on when the increased rates go into effect? May not affect too much of this biennium. The effect may, you may see the effect more when you compute the standard biennium budget for the next biennium. You need to do the rebasing before you know what it's going to cost you. The reason we have the system of rebasing is there is inflation in the world, and yes, you don't see them go down because there's inflation in the world, and that's what you're keeping up with. And on occasion, the wage inflation in Wyoming, we have good times in the mineral industry, our wages rise. And that's what led to the system coming in the first place. There was evidence came to Committee 10, this was several years ago, probably more than several years ago, but that the quality of the care in the nursing homes was falling in the ways you'd expect it to fall when they couldn't get enough staff. And we did something about that, and that led eventually to the rebasing system, so we wouldn't have to deal with that on a continuous ad hoc basis. Now, last year, Mr. President, it is true we had a tight budget. It's a good deal tighter than it is now. And we said, well, we can't afford going forward, but we're starting to see some real adverse consequences. The budget isn't as tight this year. And, Mr. President, the question comes down to, are you going to stick with what we did last year, given that conditions have changed, Mr. President, and given that what's going on is starting to hurt real people out there in the nursing home, and is starting to threaten our infrastructure that we've got there that we're going to need. If for nothing else, I haven't noticed any of the members of this body getting any younger. And we all have ambitions to continue to get a little older. We're going to need these services eventually, and so are our counterparts that we represent. We are a representative body. So for all those reasons, Mr. President, I urge adoption of the amendment.
The question before us is in regard to third reading amendment number 5. I'd ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Barnard? Aye. Bebout? No. Burns? No. Case? Aye. Christensen? No. Coe? No. Cooper? Aye. Doc Satter? No. Driscoll? Aye. Emmerich? Esquibel? No. Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Martin?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer? Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 10 ayes, 20 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 5 has failed. The next amendment for our consideration, third reading amendment number 15. Reading clerk will read that at this time.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 15. Budget 48, Department of Health.
Senator Esquibel, would you like to speak to that?
Thank you, Mr. President. Move third reading amendment number 15 to Senate file number 1. This amendment, Mr. President, is not calling for millions of dollars or even hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's only asking that the $42,000 be deleted and $62,500 be included in its stead. And the reason for this, Mr. President, is, epilepsy in Wyoming, we have about 5,000-6,000 people with epilepsy, according to the Department of Health, and about 2 or 3 visits per day average around the state, people with epilepsy going to the emergency room. And those each one of those visits cost approximately $1,000, I would imagine. If we can get more education and help people cope with this disability, this sickness, if we just cut those number of visits by half, we could be saving the state approximately $365,000 a year. So I would hope that you would vote in favor of this amendment. It's only $62,500, and hope you approve this amendment, Mr. President. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, on and reluctantly against this amendment, during the JAC budgeting process, it was my motion to add $15,000 to the Epilepsy Foundation or to this very noble cause. And we've already added more money under the current budget than what they had in the previous biennium. Previous biennium, they had, I believe, $27,500. I added another 15. We went up to 35,000, and now we're talking 62,500. I think this is a worthy cause. That's why I supported it in JAC. However, folks, we have to realize that there are a lot of worthy causes out there. You know, we don't give money directly to the Cancer Society, tobacco cessation programs we do in other areas, but not any specific institution out there or cause. So, You know, my heart goes out to these folks. That's why I've supported in the past. They're at a level of funding currently in the budget more so than they were last year. I think at some point in time you have to say to folks that you've done well, and now it's time to leave us alone and wait till next year. And this is basically one of those times, Mr. President.
Another commentary, Senator Nutting. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate the extra appropriations that have been given this year to epilepsy. The original request for this year was $300,000, and the foundation gave us the amount that to continue their basic functions. They would like $85,000, and so this is still a little bit of a compromise there. I'd like to tell the Senate just a few of the things that the foundation does. An important thing is with employment. People with epilepsy have a difficult time with employment, partially because after having a seizure, they lose driving privileges and lose privileges to run other equipment, so that employment is a real need for them. In the past year, the foundation assisted over 25 people with their employment needs. They've also worked to train employers for what is needed for their employees with epilepsy and how they can continue to perform their jobs. The foundation has worked with schools, training nurses and teachers in epilepsy. An epileptic seizure can be a very, very frightening event for those who experience it and for those who observe it. And this training is really essential to deal with school children who do have epilepsy. They also have worked to train EMS providers and have worked to decrease emergency room visits. In the past year, Cheyenne Regional Medical Center and Wyoming Medical Center combined had 5 emergency room visits for seizures per day. That's 10 times the national average. The Epilepsy Foundation is working to reduce that. For these and other reasons, I do ask for your consideration to increase these funds. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President, you know, we're overwhelmingly talking about peanuts in this budget. But and let's be clear, this is money that's going through the Department of Health for education about epilepsy. We have lots of different monies going through the Department of Health for education about numerous types of diseases, including some that were mentioned earlier. And don't think we're not funding those in spades. So this is, you know, a very modest increase for a very debilitating disease that has been not received the attention that it truly deserves, Mr. President, partly because it's hard for people to get their arms around it. It's a very complex disease. The manifestation through seizures are in multiple different forms, some of which are entirely debilitating to the person. You know, families, and it's a deadly disease. The lady that was here this morning that I introduced has – can I have quiet, Mr. President? The lady that was introduced this morning has lost family members to this disease. And, you know, people die from it. People die sometimes because the medication is messed up, or because people respond to their seizures inappropriately. There's really, truly a lot of education that has to be done. And when someone has a seizure, people that don't know about epilepsy can become quite panicked and inappropriately deal with those seizures. So a lot of education actually doesn't have to do with educating persons with epilepsy, but also the general public. You know, it's a brand new thing. We started it last year. We've had some success. If there's a physician in Casper that's a neurologist, and he's absolutely stunning with his presentation. You listen to that about how complex and extensive and difficult and challenging this disease is, you begin to understand that we've only begun to touch the surface.
It's also in Wyoming, it's extra prevalent because it tends to be also occur along with trauma and head injury. And it's a manifestation of that. And lots of times people with head injuries, they recover fully, but they never recover perhaps from the seizures. And the seizures prevent them from ever having a productive life. There's just tragedies up one alley and down the other. And it's a very small amount of money, fully under the auspices of the Department of Health. And I urge your support. Thank you, Mr. President.
Any other comments? Seeing none. Question before us is in regard to third reading amendment number 15. I'd ask the chief clerk to call the roll.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines? Jennings? 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 Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer? Scott?
No.
Von Platern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 15 ayes, 15 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 15 has failed. Next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 20. Reading clerk will read that in at this time.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 20, Budget 48, Department of Health.
That is the Scott Amendment. Go ahead, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, what this amendment does is put $15 million in general fund, $15 million in federal funds into the Medicaid program. I bring this amendment, Mr. President, very reluctantly. It was not my idea. This amendment is being brought at the specific request of our governor. Mr. President, we've got a mess in our Medicaid program. And a good part of the mess is one that is shared with every other state in this union. The Medicaid program is one of the entitlements that is out of control. And it is an entitlement program. Somebody presents to a provider that is enrolled in Medicaid, needs some medical services, that has to be provided, and we have to pay the bills. If we don't, the federal government removes the federal share from the Medicaid program, essentially kicks us out, and we've got not a $15 million problem, we've got a $500 million problem. Because those are services that our constituents need. And the federal government constrains what we can do to control the costs. There are ways around their constraints. There's things called 1115 waivers you can use. There's some things we have done in the long-term care area that reduce the demand for the expensive care. Your Joint Labor Committee brought a bill on that subject through a few years ago, Mr. President, passed. It works. We're saving some significant amount of money there, keeping the increases in Medicaid down, so we don't have as much of a problem as many states do. But we've got a problem. Okay, we also have a special problem in the management of our Medicaid program. And I suppose I probably shouldn't even raise the issue because it probably speaks against the amendment. But I'm informed, was just given a paper that said for the biennium that ended June 30 of 2010, the previous biennium, they overspent their budget by $26 million. $21 million if you offset it against the other reversions from the health department. Big time. And I don't know whether they just carried those bills over onto this biennium, which is what's been done in the past way back when, or whether they just went ahead and spent it without the budget. There's no sanction anymore on a bureaucrat overspending their budget. That was removed in a revision years ago, and we haven't succeeded in getting one back in. So I don't know which they did. And I don't trust the numbers from that source. But I'll report to you, we've inherited a certain amount of trouble there, one way or another. And if we don't put this money in, it's the judgment of the governor that the budget will be insufficient. And then what's he got to do about it? Well, you can't cut back eligibility. You're constrained by the feds. And you can't cut back eligibility. You can't put in a waiting list in most of the program. That's not allowed. Only thing that's allowed is you go cut provider reimbursements. What does that mean? It means it's more is going to be cost shifted by your hospitals onto private bills. It means that your physicians are going to take a hit, and you'll hear about that. It means that the providers who are very dependent on the Medicaid program, your nursing homes, your adult DD providers, and there's a whole range of other ones. The people that provide the in-home nursing services that help keep people out of the nursing homes, all those are going to take a hit. And, Mr. President, our provider community is fragile, and I don't want to see our new governor have to start off because we underfunded a program for which we're responsible, with having to explain to every provider in the state why they're getting hit.
Senator Scott, time.
Mr. President, I urge adoption of the amendment.
Questions? I'm going to call on Senator Schiffer, and then I'll go to Senator Nicholas. Go ahead, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, and I too rise in support of this amendment. And actually, I had a different figure than what the chairman of the committee asked. And I'm not sure this is the right number, but and I agree with what he said. The only recourse we have, if we run short of money, is to short the service providers, the doctors, the nurses, the emergency teams, the retirement homes. That's who ends up getting shorted. In our state, we're already short of doctors, of nurses, advanced practitioners. We've done everything we can to recruit them in on the one hand, and if we don't have the money in the Medicare system, it means we're not going to pay those folks. It makes no sense. We're trying to build that system of health care, and yet we may be saying, yeah, we're going to build it, we're going to get you to come, but oh, by the way, we pay you at 80% what the market is, and when we run out of money, we're going to drop that to an even lower percentage. It's bad policy. It's bad for our state. If this, somehow or other, hopefully we'll get this system under control. But until we do that, we need to make sure that the resources are there. Reluctantly, I ask you to support this amendment. It's the right thing to do.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, let's really look and see what this amendment does. It's $15 million for June of next year. That's what it is, because these would be the last dollars spent out. And let's do a little counting here. You've got June, May, April, March. You've got 4 months of expenditures. And we're spending $1.2, $1.3 billion a year, something like that, Medicaid. We have ample time, if there are shortages, to come in into next year's budget and make funds effective immediately. Now, if the budget process is as it was presented to us in JAC, then we don't have a shortage, and we've got ample money. Now, if things change and you have more employment and the budget for Medicaid goes down, we'll have more than ample money. If things change again and you have continued unemployment, then, of course, we'll have to do something next year when we come here. But this is the last money in. It'll be the last money out. And we've got 4 months, which is a lot more than $15 million. There's no chance that we're going to be short of money of paying our providers by the time we come back here a year from now. So, Mr. President, these dollars, or all they are, is just sitting out there. Whether they're going to be spent or not, I really can't tell you. But I can tell you is that we're adequately funded until we sit again. We are. And there's no doubt about that. I don't think there's an argument on that. I don't know how there could be an argument on that, that we're not adequately funded until we come back here and sit here in this chamber a year from now. And we can make those funds effective immediately. This is not necessary. We've only got, I think, about $20 million left, a hair over $20 million to spend. This will take $15 million out of that. And, frankly, I want to make sure that we have a little bit of money in our pocket when we come back next year. And if we spend it today on funds that we really don't even know that we're going to need, then when we come back in our profile and have to do our budget next October, in December, then we're not really sure what we're going to have, except that we're going to have $15 million less to profile. And we'll have better figures when we come back in next December as to whether or not we're on track with our assumptions or not. And frankly, the department hasn't had the best record of determining what these expenditures are going to be. But we've got 4 months sent in there at the end of this biennium. That's all money that's there. These dollars, if they are going to be spent, are going to be spent in June, and we've got ample time to address this. So I urge you to vote no.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I urge you to vote no as well, but I would like to explain to you what the issues are, what your JAC did, so you'll understand how we went about our decision. The governor, both governors had the same recommendation. There was no change from one governor to the second governor. The governors requested $66 million of more funding in this agency. If you biennialize that for the next biennium, that's just the general fund, by the way. So you double that with federal funds. So the next biennium, when we come back, if it holds, that'll be over $120 million increase for the biennium. There is $25 million in the auditor's reserve account for the auditor, and it has become clear to us that the auditor reserve account has become part of their budget. They've been going through a burn rate, if you will, to consume those dollars. The governor also recommended that we add another $25 million to the auditor's reserve, so the auditor's reserve would reach a total of $50 million. Our recommendation to you was that we abandon that auditor's reserve. It's become a bad tool, if you will, and the Department of Health simply uses that as their safety net for not having to make tough decisions. We do think tough decisions are needed, and they may be require some holding the cost on provider reimbursements. So we adopted the governor's recommendation for an additional $66 million for this year for this department. But we said we want you to use the $25 million in the auditor's reserve. So as a consequence, we funded at $41 million, and then when you reach the audit reserve of $25 million, those will leverage the federal dollars. They just go through a process called the B-11 process. So we funded entirely the request of the governor, and there is a difficulty out there because when our unemployment was climbing, so did our expenses. We don't know if those are going to continue to climb, and as has been discussed, when new enrollees come onto the program, the initial enrollment is very expensive because they have held up medical costs. It is our expectation, our hope, that the numbers will go down, the costs will be going down, but if they don't, then tough decisions need to be made. We are not recommending continued $50 million reserve in auditor's account because I think that just simply says it's part of your budget. So we adopted the rec. We have the equivalent of $66 million, and what the governor would like to have is more in reserves. Now, it is true that we are spending, at present rate, about $1.6 million per day. $15 million of general fund is about 9 days of expenditure. So that's true. That would be 9 days next June or July. Our belief is the way that our recommendation is you hold the line at the $66 million requested by the governor, and if that is not enough and they've done all the cost-cutting they can do and there's just no ability to further manage those dollars, then when they come back next year, they ask for an exception request in the next budget, and that exception request would be for the amounts that they feel that they need to finish out the last 9 days of the year. But we expect that that will be an inquiring process, and we'll find out what are you doing. But, folks, we have a role in trying to manage this budget. And the way you manage the budget is you control the purse strings and expect people to work within it. And I agree that there are sometimes tough decisions, and sometimes folks don't get the reimbursements they'd like. But you have some policies to make, decisions to make, and I urge you to vote no.
Anyone else before the sponsor stands his final time? Seeing none, Senator Scott, would you like to make your final?
Mr. President, when you followed all those numbers all the way through, this request is less than what the governor had asked for. And Mr. President, I think that's appropriate. I don't have much confidence in the projections that we're getting out of the Medicaid program. I think, Mr. President, the good senator from Goshen County was charitable in his description of some of the problems. They're quite real. But, Mr. President, the problem is that if you wait entirely until we're down here again, and you have competent management, as I think we're about to have, in the Medicaid program, they're going to have to say, well, suppose the legislature doesn't. They've thought about it. This is what they've given us. We got to live within it. Then they have to start whacking the providers before we sit again, or the whack on the providers will get impossible in those last 3-4 months. And frankly, Mr. President, this is not particularly my amendment. This is one that I was asked to do by the governor.
Chief Clerk, call a roll in regard to third reading amendment number 20.
Barnard? No. Bebelt? No. Burns,
no.
Case,
no.
Christensen,
no.
Coe,
no.
Cooper,
no.
Dockstader,
no.
Driscoll,
no.
Amrick,
no.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geis,
no.
Hastert,
no.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
no.
Jennings,
no.
Johnson,
no.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
no.
Meyer, Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Rothfuss,
no.
Schiffer? Scott?
Aye.
Von Slatern?
No.
President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 5 ayes, 25 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 20 has failed. The next amendment for our consideration, third reading amendment number 6, I'd ask a reading clerk to read that amendment in at this time.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 6, Budget 67, State of Wyoming.
Senator Jennings, if you'd like to move that amendment, speak to it, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would. I'd move third reading amendment on Senate File 1, Amendment 6. Ladies and gentlemen, all this does is ask that the university give us a report on what they do with the block grant. I heard a rumor that somebody else is working on a budget someplace, and this was in their budget, and they asked if we'd bring it up in our budget. Again, all it does is ask for a report on what's going on with the block grant.
Any comments, questions of the sponsor? Seeing none, all those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 6 has passed. Next amendment for our consideration is a corrected copy of third reading amendment number 16.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 16, corrected copies. Budget, education, school finance.
Senator Nicholas, you'd like to move this?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to move third, and I do move third reading amendment number 16 to Senate File 1. Ladies and gentlemen, we had a bill earlier in the session that we learned a lot about the process of funding and the amount of funding that's resources that are held in the local communities, particularly some of the mineral wealthy communities. And all this amendment does is say that the interest earned on those accounts and money are considered state resources and will be applied towards their block grant.
Comments? Questions? Go ahead, Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just want to confirm we're on 16. Is that correct, Amendment 16?
We are on corrected copy, third reading amendment number 16.
I'm sorry, Mr. Okay, President. I do not have a corrected copy.
Okay.
I'm looking.
I'll give you just a minute to... To look at that. Senator Nicholas, would you like to make another statement?
Explain 17. Let me back up and make sure. With respect to third reading amendment number 16, what it does is for those districts, for the recapture districts that are borrowing money from the state and they don't repay us till the end of the year, even though they're sitting on millions of dollars, we simply say, since we're having to pay interest on those monies, you should pay the state the same interest that that we're having to pay to the Common School Permanent Land Fund. So the districts that have the resources, that are borrowing money at the beginning of the year, they pay interest at the same rate that we pay.
This is, I think, just a directive, and I would again say this is third reading amendment number 16, corrected copy. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now on third reading amendment number 17, and I'd ask that that be read in at this time.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 17, Budget, Section 205, Education, School Finance.
Senator Nicholas, you'd like to move third reading amendment 17.
Mr. President, I do. I move third reading amendment number 17 to Senate File 1. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the amendment that I described earlier, and what this does is provide that all the interest earnings made on all these accounts that are sitting out there and become part of the state resources and are charged against the districts, we fully fund the districts through their block grant, and to the extent that they're accumulating these earnings in these other accounts, they ought to be applied against the block grant and reduce their block grant amounts.
Questions? I'm going to go to Senator Von Flader, and then I'll go to Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll remind the body that every district makes some interest. Now, our district makes a lot. Got that. But every district has a chance. What we're saying now is you can manage the money, you can keep the money, but there's no incentive for you to make any money on this money. In fact, if you're smart, you just stick it away in the, under the mattress, and then, you know, at the end of the year, use whatever that money is, pay back your block grant, receive your money that the school foundation sends to you to operate your schools, but no incentive whatsoever to make any money off that money. In other words, we're not going to add one more pencil, piece of paper, anything to any school because of the interest you would have garnered. And I'll remind you that every district makes some. Ask you no vote on this, please.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think we might be going just a little bit too far and stepping over the line on this one here because we're looking at all the different accounts that are out there in every district. And these are some of the monies that are out in our facility repair and replacement accounts, major building maintenance accounts. A lot of times those funds are kept there, and these districts are trying to accumulate that interest so they can actually do that major building or major maintenance that's required. And if we bring all that money back into the state, then I think we're really interfering with the process that goes on in local districts to try to get enough money to do that major building or major maintenance project. And so I'm a little bit leery about whether we're stepping over the line just a little bit too much on this one.
Other comments? Senator Jennings, I'm going to go to you, and then we'll go further on.
Thank you, Mr. President, for picking me first. I'd like to ask the sponsor of the amendment, who's not paying attention. Sponsor of the amendment?
Senator Jennings,
Mr. President, I'll ask you, Mr. President. As the sponsor looked at this, was he trying to address, Mr. President, the fact that these school districts out there that can collect a lot more money and therefore make a lot more interest puts them on an unequal footing with the districts that can't collect a lot of money and don't make a lot of interest? Thank you, Mr.
Thank
President.
Thank you, Senator Scott and then Senator Landon, and we'll go on around.
Mr. President, this amendment on its face doesn't appropriate more or less money, but I think it has major implications. I would ask for the yeas and nays on it.
Certainly.
Mr. President, I think the argument that's telling is you're removing the school district's incentive to invest these monies prudently, get a decent return on it, and I think, Mr. President, for that reason, it's going to wind up costing us considerable.
Senator Landon.
My concern with this amendment certainly is in line with the good senator from Campbell County, good senator to my left, but also because, you know, the reason I've got a little bit of concern with this amendment is that it comes in on a third reading of the budget after we discussed a piece of legislation that couldn't make it all the way through. I assume that's why we're coming back in with this budget amendment, and you know, I'm just not certain that that's a good way to discuss policy.
Senator Rossless, and then we'll go to others.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for the amendment, and to begin, I'd like to clarify the concerns by my colleague in Goshen County, who was afraid that the interest earnings on the separate major building accounts would be taken away. The language, as indicated in lines 9 through 11, specifically says excluding interest earnings on the separate major building and facility repair and replacement account established under the Wyoming statute. So it actually reads consistent with what you're hoping for, Senator. I hope that clears that up. But realistically, I think what this goes to, Mr. President, is the fact that there is some inequity. We have a model. We go to great lengths to calculate through that model what the right distribution of state funds are. And then due to the way that we distribute that funding, it ends up skewing the model. So there's two possible solutions, Mr. President. One would be to go back and reconfigure the entire model and take that into consideration. The other solution would simply be this amendment. And I certainly recognize the concerns of some of my fellow colleagues about the fact that this might decrease the incentive to gain the highest interest rate possible when you had an in the bank, and I would think that that's something that we could potentially look to down the road, but they're still going to have to put it into a bank. It's still going to be an interest-bearing bank account, and I don't think they're going to put it under the mattress, Mr. President.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, this is a question for the sponsor, but as I read this amendment that we're on and the one we just passed, compare those, I think members of the 61st legislature, I think we're betwixt and between. The amendment was just passed, which relates to the amendment we're on, says that those school districts that borrow are now borrowers will pay interest. This one says that those school districts that are net that have the excess, the net excess funds, the recapture districts, that now if with this is will have the interest that are net borrowers paying under the last one. This one says those are the net gainers will get to keep their interest if this amendment doesn't pass. So we're in the middle of the stream, and if we change the horse and vote down this amendment, we're likely to fall into the water and drown. And so maybe reluctantly so, but I don't know that you much have a choice, gentlemen and lady, of not voting for this.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Appreciate those words, and I think it's all the more reason that we get off the horse midstream, because it's going to get a lot deeper on the other side of the river. This is a bad idea, folks. We're coming back around the corner with it, and you know, maybe half to the conference committee is better than the whole to the conference committee. I urge you to defeat the amendment.
Okay, Senator Bernard.
Are reserve accounts meant for a disaster or for a really big purchase? I think if we take the interest away from this, at some time we might have to end up giving these people back more money when we didn't really need to.
Senator Driscoll.
I'm opposed. We're heading for straight socialism, folks. This deal is, they just well move the accounts down here. We're piece at a time. We're taking everything we've got away from our local school districts. I really am starting to wonder why we have school boards and local districts and don't just add on a little bigger building down here. They piece at a time, rob and give back and sit on a hen's nest, and I don't want to be one of the ones on the nest. Let's leave a little bit of local dignity in our school boards and some control. We're one step away from saying, let's just send your checking account to us and let's turn her over. It's going to get where we have no local people that care about our schools. It's going to be dictated from the top down. Let's stop this now and let's start rolling some of the other end of it back. This deal of appropriations just stealing our money is ridiculous.
Senator Cole.
Well, Mr. President, I just kind of felt like I had to stand up. I chair Senate Education and talk about this amendment. I actually do support the amendment. Now, think what we're doing here. First of all, this doesn't address reserves, if I understand the amendment right. This is just monies that come into the district, the $1.5 billion. Major maintenance payments are over $82 million a year. Remember that every district can keep 15% in reserves, and that's an astronomical number out there. They're drawing interest on that. It's a significant number. But remember also, out of $1.5 billion a year we pay out in block grants, 62% of that goes through the foundation program. 62% of that. I think this amendment is probably a good amendment. And I think we should adopt it.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Mr. President, it's been a long enough debate that I was able to have another half cup of coffee and actually take a look at this and understand it a little bit, and actually rising on and for the amendment from the standpoint that now that I understand it, Mr. President, it's a good little amendment, because it as it was pointed out by the good senator from the Ivory Towers, that it does exclude those things that I had a concern about, that all these districts are going to be able to keep their interest earnings on these accounts and the major accounts and things, and they'll be able to collect those interests and make those major improvements and on facilities and replacements, and this just really goes to the, from what I can tell, the recaptured districts that are using money to augment education in ways that other districts can't. So I think the good senator from Albany County has done a good job on this, so I'd ask for your approval.
Other commentary? Would the sponsor like to say anything else here? Go ahead.
Just Mr. President, thank you. All this does is treat everybody equally. When we put together the model, we fund 100% of the cost of education. And there are some that require money. So they're not going to spend it all on activities. And they're not going to put it.
Yeah.
What they've been doing before to get the interest. We'll all be alike. Everybody will be alike, and if we're not funding the schools adequately, if you believe that, then everybody will be funded more additionally through the model, so it'll be equitable. But it's not fair that we come here and we fund everybody equally, and if you're a small district, you don't have very much money to augment your income, but if you're a large district up to the northeast, you can augment your salaries, you can augment everything because you're making a whole bunch more money that nobody else can share. This is designed for equality. And the fact is we're paying 100% of the expenses down here. And when we pay out our expenses, we should know what you have in your pocket first. And if you have money in your pocket, you should use it first. I urge you to support the amendment.
Question being called in regard to third reading amendment number 17 does have monetary consequences. Yeas and nays have been requested. I'd ask Chief Clerk to call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick? Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Martin, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Rothfuss, Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 15 ayes, 15 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 17 has failed. Senator Landon.
Mr. President, thank you. We are fortunate to have with us this morning, fellow senators, some members of one of the best grade schools in Wyoming. Happens to be my neighborhood school. Mrs. Brown and all the Manor Heights elementary students are here. Would you help me welcome them to the Senate?
Welcome, students, and enjoy your day. Were there any other requests for privilege? Next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 7. I'd ask that amendment be read in at this time.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 7, Budget 06, Administration and Information.
Senator Nutting, would you like to address the amendment?
I would, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 7 to Senate file number 1. If you have your cheat sheets handy, this relates to page 50, line 14, Department of Corrections. The amount on that line, according to this budget, is $40,359. What this amendment does is to restore it to the $1.2 million that was originally recommended by the governor. This amendment will restore funds to build a nursery and some currently unused rooms in the women's prison. if I've had several handouts distributed to you over the past few days. One is an article from the Casper Star giving some information that was originally given out for this amount of money. The inmates with this money would be able to keep their newborn children with them for a limited period of time after birth, and other inmates would be allowed to have day and overnight visits with their children. Since 2007, there have been 15 babies born to women inmates at the prison, and today we have pregnant women in the prison. This is a population, Mr. President, that is entirely dependent on us. So often we say we want people to work to better themselves, but this population is 100% dependent on us. The second article is from the paper, the Wyoming Tribune Eagle.
Senator Nutting, just a general reminder, perhaps we ought to refer to these as...
as a local paper?
Yeah. Eastern Wyoming paper, Central Wyoming paper.
Statewide paper. I correct that, Mr.
Indirect
President.
Reference.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
This article gives some general information about the kind of population. Women prisoners tend to have significant differences from men. Property crimes are the reason that most women go to prison. Violent crimes sends more than half of all male offenders to prison, but it's rare for women. Women are usually there for nonviolent crimes and will be released soon and need to be able to return to their families. Being a mother is not easy, and it doesn't come automatically. Mothers need time with their children and with their babies. Babies and children need time with their mothers. It's been shown that if this bonding process can occur, that children do better and the women have far lower of a recidivism rate. If we approve this, they can immediately start working on this, and these women who are pregnant right now can benefit, and more importantly, their babies can benefit. So I urge you to please vote yes on this amendment.
Comments, questions? Senator Schiffer, go ahead, please.
Yes, Mr. President, a question for the sponsors. As I recall, the medium security prison in Torrington also included a women's, and I believe it was a maternity and medical center within that facility. My question is this redundant with that, or how do the two fit together, or perhaps the facility never got actually incorporated into Torrington, but I know it was designed in, and how do the two fit together?
Other questions? Go ahead, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to the good senator last spoke, that facility is there. And so my question, the women are brought down there to give birth down in Torrington. The question I have is, my understanding is, as inmates, they can no longer retain custody of the children. They're given to family members and so forth. So my question is, if this is built, are we changing that policy on part of the state?
Other questions of the sponsor before she... respond to those. Seeing none, Senator Nutting, would you like to respond to those questions, please?
This facility would be complementary to the health that is currently available. Currently, as soon as the women give birth, the infants are taken away. As far as for older children, it's not part of the medical program, but currently, they can only have short visitations with their mother. This would allow them to stay overnight. Children can get some interesting misconceptions, and they can come up with some strange ideas about where their mothers are when they're separated from them. And this really gives them a concrete thing to know what their mothers are doing. So it is a very separate service.
Question is, in regard to third reading amendment number 7, it does have a monetary effect. I'd ask the chief clerk to call the roll in regard to third reading amendment number 7.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Martin?
No.
Meyer? Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 7 ayes, 23 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 7 has failed. Senator Landon?
President, may I have privilege?
You
before?
May.
Thank you. Well, as you notice, perhaps, fellow senators, we have some more of those Manor Heights Jaguars up here in the balcony. If you'd help me make them feel welcome here in the Senate. Welcome, Manor Heights.
Well, welcome, and Senator Landon, I don't know how I feel about having a bunch of jaguars up above me there. Yes, Senator Burns.
Mr. President, if may I have privilege of the floor.
You may.
Mr. President, back behind them up in the western bleachers is actually my favorite kids. They're the third graders from Bighorn who immediately after this are going to be getting back on a bus and driving 325 miles home. So they're here with Crystal Lenhart, who's a student teacher, and Marcia McChesney, who is, I consider, a treasure. Thank you very much.
Welcome to you, and I guess my back is well protected today. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 1:30.
1:30. Are there any announcements? Senator Hines.
Mr. President, committee number 3 representative in 15 minutes after adjournment to take up House Joint Resolution 3, resolution to Congress and the United States Supreme Court.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1 judiciary will meet Friday, February the 18th. At 7:30 a.m., we've moved that up in anticipation of potential early gavel in tomorrow to undertake the revised list of bills. House Bill 256, Safe Homes Act, redo, or number 2. House Bill 249, acceptance of citation. House Bill 190, electronic fine submittal. House Bill 203, child support orders. And House Bill 122, no duty to retreat.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules, will meet today at 1 o'clock in S5 to consider the following bill, House Bill 87, Obsolete Laws, General Revisions.
Other announcements, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, your conference committee on House Bill 124, National Guard Emergency Deployment Professional Licensing, will meet at noon tomorrow over on the House side in the Transportation Committee room.
Thank you. Other announcements? Seeing none, the motion was that the Senate be recessed until 1:30 p.m. this afternoon. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. We are at recess until 1:30 p.m.